You're listening to Precinct 444, a podcast network from the National Law Enforcement Museum. Today we're bringing you an episode from Law and Disorder, where we dive into the world of true crime stories with memorable cases that have lasting effects for law enforcement.
Hello, and welcome to Precinct 444, the National Law Enforcement Museum's podcast network. My name is Anna Muckenfuss, and I'm back with this month's very special episode of Law and Disorder. Over the last year and a half since we started this podcast, Law and Disorder has covered some interesting cases, but we have also taken some time to look at specific areas of forensic science. One such area that we covered was the use of forensic genetic genealogy, which pairs the genetic analysis with traditional historical and genealogical research to help law enforcement officers solve sometimes long cold cases. Back in December of 2023, the National Law Enforcement Museum also hosted a public program entitled Genetic Genealogy, Closing Cold Cases with the Power of DNA. The moderator for that panel was Dr. Jennifer Smith, who boasts a career of nearly four decades in forensic science. Today, I'm sitting down with Dr. Smith to discuss her extensive career and expertise, and also hear her hopes for the future of women in forensic science. All right. So we're here today with Dr. Jennifer Smith. We're going to be talking about her career in forensic science, and we'll talk about some of the science as well, but just really get into a good discussion about what it's like to be a forensic scientist. Welcome, Dr. Smith.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And before we dive into our questions, I want you to kind of briefly introduce yourself to us. So tell us who you are. Tell us kind of a broad overview of your career.
Well, thank you very much for having me. And I have been in this career for over 40 years, so I'll be as brief as possible. But I'd like to start out with the fact that I'm actually a retired special agent from the FBI, but I'm also a forensic scientist. And my specialty over the past 40 years has been forensic serology and DNA typing. It started actually an interest when I was younger, but I think official education started at Penn State University. I graduated from there in 1981 with a PhD in biochemistry. And then based on some recommendations, I went on to get a graduate degree in physiological chemistry, did a brief postdoc at Harvard, which convinced me that I did not want to be a research scientist. So I was fascinated with becoming a forensic scientist. Specifically, I was interested in the FBI. Well, in those days, if you wanted to work in the FBI lab, you first had to be a special agent. So I became a special agent in 1986. My first assignment was not the lab, it was the Baltimore field office. And I worked cases there as a new case agent. And after about 4 years, I was transferred to the FBI laboratory. There, I became an examiner doing DNA testing, which was pretty new when I got there. It was just getting started. From 1995 to 2001, I was actually the manager of the DNA unit. And in 2001, following the events of 9/11, I became a part of a group of agents that were detailed to the CIA. And while I was at the CIA, I actually managed their Biological Technology Center, which exposed me to what I want to call the world of microbial forensics. After doing 4 years there, I came back to the FBI, worked in the Weapons of Mass Destruction Division. I ran the intelligence section. I retired in 2009 from the FBI and did some consulting and then found myself very interested in teaching. So I went back to my alma mater at Penn State, joined the science faculty as a professor of practice in forensic science, taught there until 2015. And in 2015, I really missed being on the front lines. So I applied for the job as director of the Department of Forensic Sciences in Washington, D.C. And I was there until I resigned in 2021. I still do some consulting and some lecturing. So I'm still in it. And it's just been a great time. And I look forward to talking more about it today.
Absolutely. So we're going to start at the very beginning. From conversations that we've had, your passion for your career goes all the way back to your childhood. And I know you grew up in the Midwest similarly to me, and that's something that we have talked about quite a bit. So tell me a little bit about where you grew up and how it led to your career in forensic science.
Yes, I am from a small town called Eaton, Ohio. Eaton is in the southwestern corner of Ohio. It's sort of farm country, not a lot of large cities nearby. And when I was younger, I loved to read. I really found the world through different books that I would read. And one of my favorite series of books were the Nancy Drew books. Of course, I was a little bit devastated when my mother told me that she was not a real person, because to me, Nancy Drew was doing what I thought I wanted to do, which I love science. I love solving mysteries. And when I was about 15, I was in the public library and I found a book about criminalistics. And suddenly I realized, ooh, maybe I could become Nancy Drew after all. So this was when I kind of started thinking about this profession of forensic science. It was back, so this would have been in the 1970s. Forensic science was very different then and portrayed very differently than it is now. But I think those early days, loving science and also wanting to be a detective of some kind, led me to the discovery of this potential field.
And you mentioned that, and we'll get back to it probably in the conversation as well, but you mentioned that in the 1970s, when you were first interested in forensic science, it was a lot different and shown a lot differently at the time. And you spent a lot of your career in the lab studying DNA and working with different types of evidence, working with forensic science on the front lines. We see crime labs on TV all the time, especially now. And there were some crime shows that you saw in the 1970s, early 80s as well. What is it like? And does television portray any, or has it ever portrayed any of that experience correctly?
Well, you know, I think in the early 70s, when I was watching television, there was a show called Quincy. And Quincy focused, of course, on the medical examiner. And then in the background, there was a scientist called Sam, and Sam kind of filled in the gaps of things, maybe some fingerprints here, or maybe some serology evidence or blood evidence. The other impact I had in watching those shows in the 70s and the 80s, there were a lot of kind of made-for-TV dramas about women who were being assaulted. And often these shows were sort of about the he said, she said. You know, often the person who was the victim of the crime was victimized when they then testified about what happened. And this actually had a pretty big impact on me. As a young woman getting ready to launch and go to college, I wanted to be independent, but there was sort of this fear factor involved. And so one thing that I really started to focus on, what was the science that helped law enforcement sort out what really happened, who was responsible. And so in some ways, they portray the reality of what can happen in a courtroom. But of course, they do it very compactly. The science did not seem very sophisticated back in those days. And I used to tell people, you know, forensic science was kind of somewhere between witchcraft and voodoo. When I first got into it in the 1980s, because DNA was just around the corner, an early scientist I worked with inspired me to go on and get my degree, because he said, our science is going to grow and we're going to need stronger scientists to grow it. So that was sort of my initial take, was this was something I was interested in, but we needed to do better with the science. And that's been what's been very exciting about my career. I started kind of on the cusp of serology being somewhat powerful, but now we've seen through the advent of DNA testing that it can be even more powerful when it comes to identifying someone who may have been present at a crime scene or involved in a crime of some kind.
you started your career right at that advent of DNA is this useful tool in forensic science. And now, especially with shows like CSI and things like that, that people my age who are interested in forensic science grew up watching, DNA didn't start out being this like household kind of idea that smoking gun evidence, which is kind of a myth, but now we think of like, oh, if there's DNA in a case, obviously we've got a really good case here. But that was not always the case. Can you tell us a little bit about how the analysis of DNA really changed from the beginning of your career and even that kind of pre-DNA area of forensic science to the time you retired or even what you know it to be now?
Yes, when I first started, we were really still doing serology. So we were looking at maybe the ABO type of a blood stain. So everybody's got a type A, a type B, a type O. So it could have been as simplistic as that. And if you think about that, that's only four groups of people. That's not very informative. So as we grew, the next thing we looked at were proteins, right? And so there were some enzymes that people had. We could do some of that testing. The problem was, though, we needed substantial amounts of stain. We also needed relatively fresh stains in order to identify some of these proteins that were present. DNA comes along, and in the early 90s, just as we were learning about DNA, we had to have the technologies and techniques to get that DNA out of those stains. So forensic DNA testing actually grew side by side to the molecular biological testing that was going on in research laboratories. So it was kind of fun because we were very much on more of the leading edge of some of the sciences that were developing. And then over time, we have gotten, our stains are smaller, almost to the point where you can't see them. We're able to find DNA. We've also been able to look at more of the DNA, so it's much more informative. So when I started, we were looking at only four different locations of the DNA and trying to determine the characteristics that were there. Now we can look at hundreds of thousands of portions of DNA that can help us answer some of the questions that are in front of us. So in the 40 years that I've been involved in this, the science has progressed so that the forensic discipline of DNA testing has also been allowed to progress. It's really amazing how much we have grown. Now, to your point, there has also been a response to what we see on television. You know, no forensic test is ironclad. Every test is going to be subject to scrutiny when you deliver those results. I will say, though, that we have strengthened the science because the standards have grown up along with the science. So there's sort of these rules and regulations we need to follow as forensic scientists if we are going to deliver this information into a court of law. So everything's kind of been growing hand in hand. The trouble with TV, sometimes TV gets ahead of us. Sometimes they like to simplify things because that's what makes it more interesting to the people that are watching the television shows.
Oh, definitely. And you were with the FBI until 2009 and worked on a number of different cases, both as a field agent at the Baltimore field office and in the lab as well. Are there any cases from your time as a DNA analyst that really stuck with you?
You know, one thing that I really enjoyed, and though it's not true anymore, you don't have to become an FBI agent and then work in the laboratory. Those early days working as an agent helped me understand the perspective of the investigator. And I think to be an investigator in law enforcement is one of the hardest jobs around. I mean, imagine you're the person who walks into a home and has to figure out who just murdered somebody or who assaulted somebody. And you may or may not have any good clues to begin with. I mean, it's a very difficult job. And having been on that side as an investigator, I grew to appreciate how valuable any kind of forensic evidence could be. I had some early cases where we had a suspect, but because the latent fingerprints did not match, the individuals we identified as a suspect, they ultimately were cleared. So sometimes as an investigator, you can get tunnel vision and suddenly this evidence will come along and say, nope, you're looking at the wrong person. So I became a real believer in the need for forensic science. When I got to the FBI lab, we were one of the few labs in the country working cases. We had the funding, we were able to bring this on. So as a result of that, I got to work cases all over the country. Lots of serial rape cases, homicide cases, you know, some really serious crimes. So that was very rewarding work because we were going into different locations in the country where these very serious crimes had happened, and we were able to help link the right person to that case. Now, there were some typical high-profile cases. One that was interesting, when I was DNA unit chief, I was sent to the White House to collect President Clinton's blood because of the Monica Lewinsky investigation. I did not work the DNA. That was done by another examiner in our unit, but it certainly was an interesting way to meet a president. I was involved in the Oklahoma City bombing case because sometimes as we were moving the technology forward, so as the DNA testing was improving, we could answer different questions. In the Oklahoma City bombing case, it became important to identify the gender of a leg that was found at a critical location. The medical examiner believed it was a young male, a leg from a young male. Well, we were able to do a new test that actually showed, no, this was actually the leg of a female. So, you know, sometimes the questions they're asking, we were suddenly able to aid in answering that question. Probably the most rewarding case for me, though, was a serial rape case that I was able to work on in my hometown of Eaton, Ohio. There was a detective. So Eaton, Ohio is right on the border of Richmond and Ohio. There was a detective working out of Richmond, Indiana, and she was interviewing various male suspects. And after she interviewed them, she would collect blood samples from them because the serial rapist was raping women around Richmond, Indiana, Eaton, Ohio, New Paris, Ohio. So he had covered a large portion of territory. When she interviewed these men, she would collect blood samples. Now, back in the 1990s, when we were working this, we typically would not have worked a whole lot of blood samples. But in this case, because we were actively looking for this rapist, as she collected these samples, I would run them. And I think we were about 30 samples in, and we actually got a hit. As a result of that, we actually solved that case. And the individual who was responsible for these serial rapes over a period of 2 years was finally brought to justice. So I think personally for me, that's one of my most rewarding cases, because here I am, this girl from this little town, and I'm able to go back and help them out after several years of not living in that town anymore. So that had a lot of impact on me.
And did your, I know for me, like coming from a small town in the Midwest and then moving to a major city, in my career in the museum field was a shift. What did that feel like for you, coming from a very small community in Ohio to now working with one of the major federal law enforcement agencies in the country? What did that transition feel like?
Well, I think the message for that is, if you really believe in yourself, mm-hmm. you can try or you to do anything. You know, I never imagined I'd be working in the FBI laboratory coming from Eaton, Ohio, but I had a lot of people saying, well, why, you know, just keep following your dream. And in a way, that's exactly what I was able to do. You know, it was a circuitous path to get there. As I was thinking about this today, it took me almost 10 years to get from me wanting to be Nancy Drew to actually being able to work in the laboratory. I had to go to college. I had to, you know, go out to the field and be an agent. So I think for me, it's been quite a rewarding career. I've enjoyed all the steps in getting there, but it is one of those stories where you just keep putting one foot in front of the other. And, you know, fortunately, I was able to really get to do some good work with a lot of good people. And it was very exciting. It's been very exciting.
Absolutely. And from 2015 to 2021, you served as the director of the DC Department of Forensic Sciences, which is a pretty unique agency because of the city where it is and how law enforcement works in the city of DC. So it serves all of these many agencies that we have and all their complicated jurisdictions. So tell us a little bit about what it's like working at a place like DCDFS versus like the FBI crime lab.
Well, I love leading the DC laboratory. You know, it was very different in many ways. Certainly it was a little bit smaller, but yet we were pretty much full service, I'd like to say. We offered all of the same major forensic disciplines, fingerprints, testing, latent fingerprint examination, firearms, DNA testing. We also had, as a result of the legislation, we had the public health laboratory as a part of our agency. One of the things, though, that really attracted me, though, to this lab was technically it was an independent lab. In other words, it was free of interference by law enforcement or prosecutors, because most forensic labs in our country are housed within law enforcement agencies. So one of the issues when I was in the FBI lab, we had to compete with all the other FBI field offices, all the other needs of the FBI when we needed resources. DFS was unusual in that I could go directly to the mayor, to the city council, and ask for resources. So the competition was less, even though I was still working in support of law enforcement, prosecution, the public defenders. I mean, we sort of saw our customer base as more broadly than I saw it when I was in the FBI. So the model of the Department of Forensic Sciences was really exciting for me. It allowed us to do some things a little bit differently because we had the public health lab. I'll give you an example. When I got there, we didn't have a forensic chemistry unit. We were able to open a forensic chemistry unit. We put it in our public health lab, which allowed us to not only look to see if a drug was heroin or an opioid. We weren't just investigating those because they were seized illegally and proving that they were, in fact, those drugs. We also were surveilling those drugs. We were looking for the presence of fentanyl. So we looked at it not just from a perspective of, are we helping law enforcement, but we're also looking to see what more dangerous drugs were in our community. And if you remember, the opioid crisis was occurring. Many people were dying because they didn't realize fentanyl was in the drugs they were taking. And so we were able to kind of kill two birds with one stone through this, the approach we took to forensic chemistry. So that was exciting. That would not have been something I would have been able to do had I been in the FBI laboratory. We got to bring in new techniques and technologies. We were a little bit more flexible in those ways at DFS. We could, for example, we brought improvements to the DNA unit that was there, and we worked our backlog down to zero. You know, that was very unusual for public laboratories to be able to do, sometimes because they couldn't get the resources that they needed. But in DC, we were able to get those resources. And it was really kind of an exciting time to be there. I really loved working for the citizens of DC. It was a great experience.
And I actually met you through your time at the DC Department of Forensic Science here at the museum. So it's been very interesting to see kind of how your career has changed since you left the Department of Forensic Science, but also how much that agency is out in the community and trying to educate the public about forensic science and how forensic science works. And they call themselves the People's Lab for a reason. They're very much involved with the people of DC, which is very, very interesting and not what you would expect from a science lab or a forensics lab by any means.
Yeah. I think I've found over my time that people are very much interested in the science that goes on. And one of our jobs as a forensic scientist is to be able to articulate the science, explain the science, help people understand how it works. Because at the end of the day, the individuals who sit on that jury need to be able to appreciate the evidence that they're hearing. And I think that's always been a part of the job that I've enjoyed, is that it gives me an opportunity to talk about these new technologies, or it gives me an opportunity to defend even some of the older technologies that we have. Latent fingerprints has been around for hundreds of years, and people using that to help identify individuals. So we have this whole spectrum of disciplines and sciences, and it's been very rewarding to be sort of the person who can do the science and then help explain the science to critical decision makers like jurors.
Absolutely. It comes down to, science is complicated, and it's something that some people can hear about it and understand it really easily, and others, it goes over your head and makes no sense. So being able to have professionals working in the field that can talk to the general public and say, like, hey, it looks more complicated than it actually is, and break it down, especially something that the general public, I mean, you look at true crime podcasts, you look at true crime TV shows, it's one of the most popular genres out there right now. So it's something that's very useful and very welcomed right now, I believe, by society.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you've spent a lot of your career, especially lately, educating future forensic scientists. So you've become a professor at the forensic science program at the Eberly College of Science at Penn State. I've seen you lecture with our forensic science, the high school summer camp that we have at Georgetown that I've worked at before. If you were talking to the next generation of forensic scientists, what should they know about this field? And why should they consider a career in forensic science?
Well, I think what I've always enjoyed about this is I think of this as the poster child for public service science. Mm-hmm. So for me, the folks that really do well in forensic science, they are people who are curious. They are people who believe that science can add benefit to our lives. They are disciplined enough that they will go through and get their science training. And I think to be a forensic scientist, it is important that you get a good foundation in a science discipline, whether it's biology, chemistry, physics, engineering, you pick the science. I think that provides a good foundation for you then to go on and apply your science to these difficult questions. The other piece of advice is forensic science, in my mind, has expanded. It used to be the science that supported criminal investigations. But I think over the time of my career, forensic science, those sciences, it is an applied science that answers questions. And those questions can be asked in the traditional law enforcement world. It can be asked in the intelligence world. It can be asked in the public health world. So the disciplines that we are using right now can be very, very important to all kinds of critical decision makers. So I always tell my students that they have to have a strong foundation. They have to be broad in their thinking as to where they might do this science. And then the other thing that I think is even more critical, it is important to bring a certain ethic to this work, that this is a work, a world where you will probably be asked to work outside your home. So this is not a job you can do from home. It is not a 9-to-5 job. So you're going to probably be asked to extend yourself and be available, because often that's when the customers are available. Crime doesn't happen 9-to-5, so you can't expect necessarily to be working 9-to-5. So I think that is something too that's important. It's a big commitment to be available to answer these critical questions when they are asked.
And I've seen a lot of statistics lately, and being someone who I graduated from college in 2017, I started to see this shift change of wanting more women in STEM. So science, technology, engineering, and math. And forensics is obviously an area of STEM. And in the last few years, just reading articles here and kind of doing market research about the field of law enforcement and forensic science and things like that, I've seen a lot of statistics and articles that say forensic science is becoming a field that is dominated by women. Would you say that is true from working in the field, or is that not as ideal, or is that not exactly as it sounds? Does that make sense?
No, I think it definitely has been a field dominated by women for many years, actually. And I attribute this largely, you know, there are things about CSI and some of the television shows that are not very positive. But one positive thing is it has greatly influenced women into believing that they could be forensic scientists. When I would talk to students and ask who inspired them or what inspired them, often they would talk about these television shows. I mean, just like I was inspired by Nancy Drew and Quincy, they would see women on these shows working in this field, and they believe that they too could do this work. So it's been kind of interesting to watch that. And then over time, I think women get into fields that they can see results from, and forensic science is definitely that kind of field. So I would say forensic science is one of STEM's success programs when it comes to getting women into this discipline. I think the other thing that's been very positive, we have seen more women leading the laboratories. So often you'll see more female crime lab directors. It's not as prevalent as I'd like. I think for the number of women that are in the field, we should see the majority of the crime labs should be led by women. And that's not necessarily true yet. So I think we have a way to go when it comes to leading these laboratories that are out there. But yes, it's definitely been a success story for women in science.
For sure. And I know I've talked to a lot of students that come through the museum. A lot of them are women, and they are young women that are very, very passionate about working in law enforcement, working in forensic science especially. And it's really kind of nice to see that that's an area of this field that already a lot of women are really taking charge of, and not really making their own, but really taking ownership of their that role in kind of our justice system, which is nice. But before we close, do you have any parting words for us about a career in forensic science, about any of your major takeaways that you've had from your time in forensic science in this field?
Well, I think for me, it's been a great career. It's been very rewarding. It has surprised me in many ways, the opportunities and the doors that it has opened to be a part of this. It is hard work. I think, for example, we found out during the pandemic just how hard this work can be. And I don't mean that the science necessarily got harder, but I would say the request of society for our forensic scientists was a big one. Both the scientists who came in every day to work in the public health lab despite the pandemic, our scientists were on the streets collecting evidence despite the pandemic, our scientists were coming into the laboratory despite the pandemic. So yes, while others were able to stay at home, and that had its own dilemma and was very isolating, our scientists at the Department of Forensic Science, they came into work. And so that really kind of, for me, solidified how passionate the folks were for the work that they do. And they knew how important it was, because sadly, crime did not stop in DC. The virus was spreading, so we had to have our public health workers in. So my hope for people, if they choose this career, that there will come a time when people will ask a lot of them, and I hope and that they will step up and do the right thing and come to work, do it seriously, do it well. That's the reward of being a forensic scientist. You get to work with some amazing people who have that same work ethic, have that same passion to be the best public service scientist they can be.
Well, absolutely. And Dr. Smith, thank you so much for joining us today on the podcast. It's always a pleasure talking to you. And we love the support that you have for the museum and what we're doing here. So thank you so much.
You're quite welcome. Thank you.
Thank you so much to Dr. Jennifer Smith for joining me on today's special episode of Law and Disorder. If you haven't already, check out our program Genetic Genealogy, Closing Cold Cases with the Power of DNA at www.nleomf.org/museum/public programs, where we have included both the program and some further resources about the topic. This program features Dr. Smith as a moderator, and it's a really fascinating discussion. We hope that you've enjoyed today's episode of Precinct 444, and remember to check out our past episodes wherever you get your podcasts. As always, be sure to pay us a visit the next time you're in DC as well, and we hope to see you again soon at the Precinct.
Please subscribe to Precinct 444 on your favorite podcasting platform to stay connected and to receive our latest content as soon as it drops. We would love to hear from you. Send in your questions, comments, and feedback to precinct444@nleomf.org. You can help us make our content even better. The National Law Enforcement Museum is located at 444 East Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., and is dedicated to telling the story of American law enforcement. We expand and enrich the relationship between law enforcement and the community through educational journeys, immersive exhibitions, and insightful programs. Find us online at lawenforcementmuseum.org and stay tuned for more podcast content from Precinct 444. Until next time, stay safe. We'll see you at the Precinct.